And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of The Beat. I'm Brendan Quinn from The Athletic. Nick is on maternity leave. Congratulations again on the birth of his beautiful daughter, his second child. He is missed, but today I am thrilled to have a great guest, Kevin Pauga, Michigan State University Athletics, college basketball scheduling guru, hoop head, occasional radio analyst and TV analyst, right? I'm trying
occasional air quotes on the occasional.
metrics master and a number of other things. One of the more interesting people I've certainly had the pleasure of getting to know in college hoops, and thrilled to have you because KP, these are very strange times, and people trying to have any grasp of what this college basketball season is going to maybe look like, I'd say you're among foremost experts to talk to. So I appreciate you coming on, man.
Yeah, no, it's good to be with you. I think my job description sometimes would be better served as just a blank piece of paper that says other duties as assigned. You did a pretty good job there of introducing that.
Yeah, yeah. And a busy man. His 11th Zoom call of the day, folks. So I feel like everyone is Zoom exhausted at this point in our lives. And obviously, pandemic exhaustion is a real thing. But if you need an example of things could be worse, I think having 11 Zoom calls in one day might be it.
I was keeping track of my like Zoom stats for lack of the ability to keep any other stats earlier this summer, and I finally gave up when I think it was 13 or 14 was my daily record, and my latest start time was about 1 a.m. Eastern on one. So I think that I'll just kind of leave those as records and hope that I don't have to come and break those, but a lot of other people have it a lot worse. So if the worst thing happened, is that I'm sitting in my kitchen or in my office on Zoom all day, life ain't that bad.
There you go. I like it. So just as kind of a broad intro to, I'm sure a lot of our listeners are kind of familiar with who you are, but you know, in addition to being in an assistant athletic director role at Michigan State and very involved in the men's basketball program, and other, you know, obviously duties within the athletic department there, you're also, you know, very involved in collegiate athletics and scheduling, and working with the NCAA. Can you kind of just give folks out there apply for a job here, man? Tell me what you actually do for a living.
Yeah. So the Michigan State portion of things, I'm an associate AD from at Michigan State.
Associate AD. I'm sorry, I did not give you the proper promotion. I called you an assistant.
Did you say assistant? I'm not even sure what you said. So maybe you got it right. Associate AD at Michigan State, heavily involved in the basketball program, heavily involved in logistics and scheduling and operations. And I joked with the other duties as assigned, but jumping in on a lot of those type of things. And then doing a lot in the world of scheduling, which in the absence of actual events, we have scheduled, rescheduled, and rescheduled again multiple sports, multiple conferences across the country. So, without the ability to actually compete, scheduling is is not only a topic of conversation for people that are just interested in trying to figure out what a season's going to look like, but also just in building these schedules, we're trying to anticipate everything that we can relative to spaces, to reschedule games that might get postponed, optimize travel even more. Even now as we're talking, my computer in the background has multiple schedules that are running, and I've got stuff up in the cloud that's generating schedules and trying to push those limits, because the reality is that the environment that we're currently in, we're trying to travel as safely as possible.
Right.
The health and safety of hotel stays and facilities and airplanes and buses and all those things are key. But also we're trying to do so as cost effectively as possible as well. There's been a major financial hit to the overall industry. And so if I can let a schedule run for another 6, 8, 10 hours, like literally measuring a schedule in dollars saved, if you can get 2 more bus trips instead of charter flights, for a given sport or commercial flights, like that's tens of thousands of dollars that each optimization may be improving upon.
Yeah. And so people out there just know, like, when KP's talking about, like, you know, building schedules and stuff like this, this is beyond Michigan State. His methods and his work are used across the country by college athletic departments. And he's, you know, as I'd say authoritative as a voice as you can find right now in terms of how these things are being built and what it's going to look like. We're going to stick to college basketball here for these purposes, though. So when people ask you, you know, what is the season going to look like, Kevin, like, what's your kind of broad, you know, base level answer there?
Yeah. So there's a couple of things just kind of overarching for those that haven't been paying attention. The start date was originally set for Tuesday, November 10th. In our great scheduling terms, the start date each season is actually 3 days prior to the second Friday in November, because just saying November 10th would be way simple. So this year that fell on November 10th. The start date has been pushed back officially to Wednesday, November 25th, so an extra 15 days. And then the corresponding first date of actual practice has been pushed back as well. So that's going to take place on October 14th. That'll be the first official start date of organized practice. That's the 42 days that schools get to practice before competition, and they can practice in 30 of the 42. So right. November 25th will be that first date. And then specific to men's basketball, if you're playing in an MTE, which is a multi-team event, or as some people keep referring to them as MTVs, like the TV network, but it's actually MTE. If you're playing in an MTE, you can play 27 games. And if you're not playing in an MTE, you can play in 25. And normally those numbers are 4 more than that. It's normally 31 if you're in an MTE, 29 if you're not. But with the subtraction of 15 days, 4 games, that's about 2 weeks worth of games. That's kind of where those numbers come from. So the season will start November 25th. Schools are still working to put together their non-conference schedule. Conferences are still, in many cases, deciding on formats and trying to get information from television. There's a lot of moving parts that the adjustment to the start date has something to do with. But if I was being frank, even if everything had stayed the same, we'd still be in a similar boat, because so much of this is being influenced by college football playing a couple weeks later than it normally does, and that has a pretty significant effect on television. There's state quarantine rules that have evolved. So this is very much a moving target, and I can speak on behalf of a good amount of programs that when you start to see schedules get released here over the next couple weeks, I would view that schedule as very much as a starting point to a schedule, as opposed to the schedule that's going to actually get played. Normally in a given year, out of about 6,000 college basketball games, you have about 6, 8, 10 of them that get postponed because of a snowstorm. Somebody can't get there, or some wildfires in California 2 years ago caused a good amount of November postponements. That number is going to skyrocket this year.
Right.
And I think that collectively we're all trying to anticipate what is going to happen. How do we reschedule games? How do we move on the fly? If a team can't play because of a COVID positive test, the idea that we may pick up the phone and say, hey, today's Thursday, we've got a game on Saturday that just got called off because of COVID. So do you. You're about a 4-hour bus trip. You want to play? And it sounds crazy,
right?
But as I've talked to some video coordinators and assistant coaches in particular, I'm like, hey, like you probably have to be ready to pivot on some scouting reports on the fly, and mm-hmm. and we kind of need to embrace the weirdness of this year, because there's going to be 100 things that you've never seen before. And frankly, we may actually find 2 or 3 of them that we really like moving forward that we yeah. wouldn't have tried had we not been forced to try them as a result of the pandemic.
Yeah, I was actually talking to Izzo about that the other day, that I do wonder if there are going to be some things taken from this year that actually end up being implemented moving forward. But you mentioned the 25-27 game caps. Can teams play fewer?
Yeah, so the way that the minimum number of games in a normal year, you can play the 29 or 31 based on the MTE stuff. Mm-hmm. But there's a minimum threshold of 25 games in a normal year. And what the NCAA has done, and I'm not sure that they've done this for all sports, but they have done it for the sports that they've had to so far, is that they've taken that minimum number of games and cut it in half. So that minimum this year for D1 men's basketball is 13. Hmm. And that is for NCAA tournament purposes. And it's meant to give as much flexibility as possible. All indications are that most programs are going to schedule well north of that. Yeah. That floor is more about COVID interruptions mm-hmm. and inability to be able to reschedule games as we go. But look, like, Major League Baseball had 900 games scheduled, and they got 898 of them in. Now, it took some circuitous routes to get there. Cardinals and Marlins, and I'm pretty sure, played doubleheaders like for 3 weeks straight, and 7-inning games. And I mean, again, like you give baseball examples, the DH was in the NL. You had 7-inning games that were for real. You had the Cubs and the Cardinals played 10 times, all at Wrigley Field, with Cubs as the visiting team 3 times. Like, the list goes on and on and on.
Yeah.
And that's going to happen in college basketball too. And it's going to be chaotic. We have to embrace it. We might as well enjoy it and, mm-hmm. and not get frustrated by it, because frankly, it is what it is, and it beats the alternative.
So let's get into MTEs here for a second. It seems like initially the ideas of MTEs and bubble type scenarios that would kind of be created around these events were looking stable and things like that. And gradually it seems like they're kind of falling apart a little bit, and maybe more and more programs are considering their own events on campus that they are either, you know, that they're responsible for, even if they're being held maybe by an outside group,
yeah,
or conducted by an outside group, but they're on campus and based there. Can you kind of speak to that dynamic of this shift towards maybe more programs considering doing that stuff?
So to answer that point regarding the MTEs, in a typical year, there's been about 50 to 55 MTEs, and that number was going to go up this year. To get way into the weeds, there were some technicalities in terms of adjusted rules around MTEs that were going into effect this year, even pre-COVID, where the number of teams per field was going to shrink. And that it had a lot to do with like the campus games that you were attaching, for Michigan State last year. You play a game that is Maui on the mainland against Charleston Southern before you go to the Maui Invitational. Mm-hmm. Like this year, you would just play 28 games plus a 3-game event at Maui, and Charleston Southern wouldn't have counted as part of the Maui event. Mm-hmm. Again, technicalities in the weeds, but it affects the number of events. This year, as of early this summer, there were 24 scheduled bracketed events, and those are 4-team or 8-team brackets, like a Maui Invitational, like a Las Vegas Invitational that Michigan State played in. So it's some different events. Out of those 24 events, 16 of them were scheduled to start before November 25th. Mm-hmm. And so if 2/3 of those events are scheduled to start before that date, it is a heck of a lot more difficult to move an entire tournament where you're trying to coordinate the schedules of 4 or 8 teams than it would be to take just, hey, Michigan State's going to play Oakland on X date. Well, you have to coordinate 2 team schedules there.
Right.
Maui to move its dates, it's got to coordinate 8 teams for different challenge events. Mm-hmm. It's got to coordinate 10, 12, 14 teams per conference to be able to make those to make those work. So a lot of these events that affect a greater number of teams, it's been more challenging, and for a while it's created a good amount of gridlock in the scheduling world, because this is a process like even right now, like we would typically be working on the foundations of the 2021-22 schedules and 2022-23. Not that we're worried about every last game, but the preseason tournaments, Big Ten ACC challenges, for other leagues, the SEC Big 12 challenge, the Champions Classic, those different events where you know that you're playing in them, like those are on the calendar years in advance, and then you kind of fill in some remaining dates around those. This year, we're working off of an adjusted canvas where we've got a starting point that never really contemplated just lopping off 15 days on the beginning of the season. So in some ways, we would have collectively been better served to just wipe the slate clean and start over. Mm-hmm. But then you're also dealing with contractual elements and
right.
all these other things, which has really complicated it. So I understand that there's a lot of frustration just for folks that want to know when such and such team is going to play a first game, and coaches want to get going on starting to pull game film, and directors of ops are trying to book travel, which is affecting the airlines industry and the hotel industry. Like there's a lot that's being held up right now, but I can assure you that there is a lot of work going on behind the scenes, and I'm sure that there's been some feelings hurt. I don't think that there was any way around that, but hopefully we're all able to kind of reconcile those games that couldn't happen. I know that many games are getting pushed to future years for all sorts of reasons. Dates didn't work. There were beginnings of really prominent home and home series that why would you play them this year without fans? Those are all factors into what's going on. So I would just preach patience. We're trying to get it done as fast as we can.
What's kind of the level of concern about mid and low majors being able to build schedules that are even going to be able to warrant NCAA tournament consideration?
Yeah, so I'll hit that from a metric standpoint, because sure. I think metrics are going to look very different as a result of how schedules are built. That's not necessarily all bad, but you've heard the term cross pollination. I've started to find that like there's been like 5 or 6 buzzwords that I started using in May or June that then everybody starts using like cross pollination. Like if I had known that anybody
that is like the buzziest of the buzz, right? That is, man, I could hear that in a boardroom any presentation.
If I had known that some of these scheduling terms were going to actually be used, I would have come up with better verbiage. Like cross pollination, it's like a flower in my backyard. So,
yes.
But from a metric standpoint, what it really means is that the results based metrics are going to be even more critical than they might be in a given year,
mm-hmm.
and more in depth the team quality metrics, more the predictive metrics as a base of those results based metrics is also going to be more important. So there's going to be some wide ranges of rankings where the idea that you'd have a team that'd be like in the 30s and 40s, just kind of across the board, like you could have somebody that's 20-1 and 70 in another.
Right.
And I think that we're going to see that a little bit more frequently. It's going to be more challenging for everybody to build non-league schedules that they would normally want to build outside of COVID, whether it's based on their own state's guidelines, whether it's based on just needing to stay within a geographic footprint, whether it's based on an MTE that they thought that they were in that just got torn apart by no fault of anybody. that what that's going to do is the strength of record type metrics are going to be able to more adequately compare, hey, how does this 22-5 team compare to this other team that is 17-10 or 16-11? We've got metrics that can do that as long as we've got a good base behind the quality of teams that are being played. So it's way in the weeds, but right. there's going to need to be a little bit more art than science compared to typical years to kind of try and make that happen as we go. But in the same sense, I think that it's going to be difficult for anybody in any direction to kind of make history. Mm-hmm. Hey, like first time this conference ever got three bids in, or first time sure. this conference was ever a one bid league, like first time type things on Selection Sunday are probably going to be less likely.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Yeah, and I believe, and Dan Gavitt, I think in a story done by Dana O'Neill last month, you know, I think Dan told her that the net might be obsolete this year, and it's going to, you know, in terms of the selection committee, it'll be more kind of, you know, old school, right? Mid-90s, where you just kind of picked what you thought were the best 64, then 64, now 68 teams. How would you parse that?
So think of it this way, that to take four non-conference games off the board per team on average, you're taking about a third of the non-conference inventory across the country and just wiping it completely.
Sure.
So what that does is it puts a greater premium on the non-conference games that you actually play. It minimizes your margin of error. And so I don't think that we really know what it's going to look like. I think that we're going to know in real time that, gosh, this doesn't make sense or this does make sense. I think that we're going to kind of be able to figure it out. But I think that maybe of greater concern rather than lack of non-conference is going to be the team that ends up getting 3 weeks of games canceled, 4 weeks of games canceled, and ends up playing 17 or 18 games mm-hmm. compared to somebody that plays 27 games. Like I don't know that there's any precedent to base on how do you compare a 12-5 team to a 17-10 team.
Yeah.
Like that, like those start to become some real outlier cases. And look, like I think that we all hope that doesn't happen, but it's realistic that it will. I think that also this year is more about getting in the tournament than worrying about the seed that you're mm-hmm. in the tournament. The margin of error in seeding is going to be greater because the data is just not going to be quite as accurate to properly seed the tournament.
Sure.
So what I think is going to happen as a result is I think that you're more likely to see weirder upsets in some of those early games. The idea that you'd have a 5, 6, 7, and 8 in the Sweet 16 in a bracket, like I think that those chances increase. Now, it doesn't mean that it'll happen. Just because I said that, you'll probably have like 15 of the top 16 seeds all in the Sweet 16, like we did a couple years ago. But like that's more the effect. And so it's about getting into the tournament. Don't leave yourself vulnerable right on that edge, because those last couple spots are going to be really difficult to differentiate who should be in and who shouldn't be.
The good news is that in these trying times, there's no chance that college basketball media Twitter will even complain about whatever bracket is produced.
No. Media never complains about anything. I don't know what you're talking about.
So, in terms of building that schedule, with the postseason in mind, right? So let's take Michigan State for example. You're in a tough spot where, okay, Big Ten is stacked this year, right? And when trying to come up with some version of a non-conference schedule, it's, okay, Duke in the champions. There's going to be some kind of ACC Big Ten challenge. I believe that's still very much on the table and within the plans. Correct me if I'm wrong. And, you know, a game with Oakland. And then you have the idea of an MTE, you know, right in Orlando. Or, you know, you could do something on campus like these other places, because do you really want to play, if you play how many ever it would be, let's say 7 non-conference games, do you need to play 6 top 25 teams in those? So what's the balance there when you are looking at what's best for, you know, your institution?
So within the Big Ten, you're getting 20 strong games.
Right.
So almost regardless what happens in the non-conference, if you do well in the Big Ten, you're well positioned. 14-6 in the Big Ten is getting you in almost no matter what. 13-7, 12-8, 15-5. Like within reason, unless you're 0-7 in the non-conference, like you're well positioned there. So from that standpoint, again, like I don't think that you can worry too much about, gosh, we need to try and get to that top 4 seed line. Well, I'm not sure what the difference between a 4 and a 6 seed really is in this environment. So to me, the first focal points have been how do we give ourselves the best chance to play games? How do we set ourselves up from a health and safety standpoint within the confines of existing agreements, to the extent that is possible? And how do we maximize our chances to play? Let's not put ourselves in a position where we're really nervous about going to a certain place or playing a road game against somebody that we're uncertain about testing protocols.
Right.
And for those that are coming in, we're still working out details as to what this needs to look like. But we need to ensure that before we play any non-conference opponent, that we're sure that they're testing negative. Otherwise, like, we're not playing the game. We need to prioritize that. So it's a different lens to look through in scheduling. They're also admittedly, like, the finances on this are very different than a normal year. You've got guarantee money that look is normally in the $80,000, $90,000, $100,000 range, where a school might buy a team to come in and play at a certain venue. That market right now has plummeted because the revenue coming in for home games is not through gate. There's television revenue that comes in as part of a more holistic contract, but fans, at minimum, there will not be as many fans as normal. So I don't want to put a number on that, because that's obviously ever changing. But I think that we can say with some level of certainty that whenever the first game is at the Breslin Center, I'm not sure that we're going to see 14,797 people there. So we're trying to manage all those things simultaneously: financial, competitive, maxing the chances that we have to play the game, and while trying to kind of build a resume as a secondary criteria, and that's normally the primary criteria. Mm-hmm. The other part that I would throw in there is that I think that you've got to You've got to ensure you're over 500 overall. The reduction in non-conference. Let's be real about it. I mean, I know that there are some folks that think that you should have to be over 500 in your conference to qualify for the NCAA tournament. I'll be blunt that I think that they're very, very wrong. Mm-hmm. To segment out 18 or 20 conference games and say you have to be over 500 in this group of games. Like, why don't we just segment to, hey, well, you have to be over 500 in all your games on Saturdays, right, or 500 in all your games that are against teams that have multiple vowels in their school name. Like we could come up with all sorts of criteria, and the idea that conference win loss, it doesn't happen very often when you're 9-11 or 8-10 in conference, but it has never happened with an at large team that has been less than two games over 500. It's never happened.
Right.
This is a different world. But gosh, I'd feel a heck of a lot better going into a conference tournament at 15-12 than I would at 13-14 or 14-13.
And, you know, there's been a lot of talk for continuity and testing, and that teams are unlikely to play against teams that don't, like, forget just testing negative, but even do a step further, testing at the scale that you're able to. Michigan State obviously has assets that Central, Eastern, Western, right, don't have, where you can test every day, every other day, whatever. Like, you know, you if you have those means to be able to do so. So is, you know, how big of that is an issue of teams being able, trying to find games against just teams that are operating at the same standard, and how, like, not traceable, but, you know, how much of it is provable, really?
Yes. So one of the keys here has to do with contact tracing.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, the best chance that school, the two best chances that schools have in order to avoid contact tracing issues are daily testing,
mm-hmm.
Or they're needing to ensure that it's a clean court before you actually play the game, or a clean field in football, or whatever.
Sure.
Those are your two mechanisms to avoid contact tracing issues. And different states, even just within the Big Ten footprint, there's different states with different state mandates and states of emergency and whatever it comes to be. So it's a moving target. Let's also be real. We're taping this in early October. I don't know. Like, do people go back in November and December and listen to you? I mean, I know that people probably just binge listen to Brendan Quinn.
Oh, of course.
I don't want to be presumptive.
They need their act. They need their fix of this accent, man.
Yeah, I've taken my bike on some pretty long bike rides and wish that I wasn't playing you in one and a half speed when I still have 20 minutes left to before I make it back home. But the other part and my point saying that it's early October is that we've still got about 7 weeks before the basketball season starts. Like, 7 weeks ago, early August, like, think of where we were in early August versus today. Like,
yeah.
it is a moving target. And I know that is frustrating to a lot of people. All of this is frustrating to everybody for their own reasons, in and out of sports. But we don't want to box ourselves in, because we want to just collectively as an industry maintain as much flexibility and maintain as much control as we can. And so, yes, it's early October, and there is not a Big Ten basketball schedule out.
Right.
And I'll be blunt, it's not coming out today, and it's not coming out tomorrow either. But why put out a schedule now when frankly the schedule that you would put out a month from now, when you've got more information, may improve your chances of playing. And so we need to maximize our flexibility and spend our time wisely so that we don't put ourselves in a position where we've got a schedule out and then find out that, hey, this state is changing this, or this state is changing that, or testing looks like this. Like, I mean, even the scientific advances in testing over the last couple months have been really, really large.
Yeah. So here's a question that might just show how dumb I am, right? Typical. Is this a plausible scenario at all, that, you know, with the concerns over, you know, putting teams on planes and going this place, that place, this place, that place. Is there any scenario where, when it comes to league play, that you could put six teams in one place and knock out three games in 3 days and have, you know, everything's tested and you're not moving around and you're getting games in, right? At the end of the day, the number one goal is get games in and get to an NCAA tournament and then get to 21, 22 and act like this never freaking happened. So is that in any way possible?
I think that anything is possible.
Mm-hmm.
And so yes, I'm not sure that that's going to be plan A to start.
Okay.
But that gets back to, look, if we've hit the second week of January, and let's say that things have just gone completely sideways, and we've only played, like, collectively across the league, like, there's only been like one or two games played per team.
Mm-hmm.
Like the idea of and I don't want to box myself in by saying. But the idea of throwing out a schedule and rebuilding it, or gosh, you've got a team that is in Ann Arbor on a Thursday, and oh, by the way, they're just gonna stop off in East Lansing and play a game that wasn't even originally on the schedule on Friday just because.
Yeah.
Or you get two Big Ten games that are canceled on a weekend, and I'll get this example slightly wrong, but. But in Major League Baseball, when the Marlins had their issues early in the season,
mm-hmm.
they had been playing the Phillies, and it just so happened that the Marlins and Phillies were supposed to play the Yankees and the Orioles the following Monday through Thursday. And because of how they structured the schedule, the following week it was a reverse matchup, whatever it was. So the Marlins and Phillies couldn't play, which canceled the Marlins, Yankees, and the Phillies, Orioles, or whatever it was. So the Yankees Orioles took their games from the following week, and on a day's notice, they moved them up.
Yeah.
And they played during that week. So then the Marlins filled. So then you only had two teams that were affected by needing to reschedule games. Like those decisions are going to need to be made in real time if we get to that point. So I'll say this, that I think that we're going to do everything that we can to, as long as we can do so with health and safety in mind.
Mm-hmm.
We want to maximize the number of games played for all sorts of reasons. And if that means playing on consecutive days, like that would be like ask a coaches get up in arms over a 1 day prep, let alone a zero. like you want to see some head spinning. Walk into a coach's office and say, "Hey, you want to play Wisconsin tomorrow?"
Yeah.
And be completely serious about it. I mean, earlier, when I gave the example that, hey, it's Thursday, we had a game canceled, the idea that I would pick up the phone and call Western Michigan mm-hmm. in the non-conference and say, hey, you want to play tomorrow?
Yeah.
Like there's a little bit of old school, like, pick up basketball to this.
I like this idea of these roving bands of teams just clashing anywhere on the interstate and just throwing a ball.
it sounds crazy, but I can assure you that over the last 6 months, there have been way crazier ideas than that. And ideas that early on this summer, when I would be speaking with groups, whether it was coaches or whoever, normally I would preface something with, hey, like, this is a pretty outside the box idea, or some idea would be so crazy that I'd be like, I'm not even saying that out loud.
Right.
But now I'll just preface, hey, like, in a non-COVID environment, I'd never suggest this, but what do you think of this crazy, mm-hmm. crazy idea? And like, I've actually gotten nods sometimes. It's
sure.
It's hey, we've got to try to do whatever we can to create as meaningful a season as we can, to keep everybody healthy, to keep everybody safe. I mean, who knows what February and March look like? We may be in good shape.
Sure.
Or the NCAA tournament may need to look slightly different than it currently does.
Are you still anticipating a 20-game Big Ten schedule?
I think that that all things are still on the table.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look, like, there's plan A. I mean, I think that conferences are starting to kind of come out with their plans.
Yeah.
Some conferences are like a 10-team conference. A double round robin is 18 games. An 11-team conference, a double round robin is 20 games. I think that that in general is the range in which most conferences are still kind of staying within, that 18 to 20 range. So until everything's for certain, I don't know that I want to, again, box anything. Yeah. But I think that that's at least the direction for now. But until there's an actual conference schedule, that even is set as a starting point here, hopefully within the next couple weeks, I'd again say that flexibility and everything's on the table.
Yeah.
And now two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
So I can't let you get out of here. I'm sure we have Michigan State fans, right, listening, who are hoping for some Michigan State info. Is there anything that you can share in terms of updating where the non-comp or what your guys are thinking in terms of what's, you know, plausible in your best interest, blah, 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 that is as of 4:15 p.m. on Thursday, October 8th, that you can share with us?
So you're implying that if you tell people that I'm on your podcast that people would actually care to listen, like
I think it'll just be by happenstance personally, but
leave it to, hey, some guy talking about Michigan State is on there, don't say who, and then by this time of the podcast we can let everybody know that they
figured it out.
Yeah, that I'm not Izzo and not giving information that's nearly as cool as Izzo or somebody else would.
Been far less swearing than an Izzo podcast probably would have entailed, but
we're on a podcast.
Absolutely, it's encouraged here.
I was trying to keep the explicit rating off of your podcast to increase listenership.
Right, but you are a you're an associate. Maybe if you were an assistant AD, okay, you could throw something out there like that. But as an associate AD, sir, I don't think that's a good idea.
Hey, just remember, assistant and associate both start the same way.
Well played.
So I'll tell you this, that truthfully. Our non-conference schedule at Michigan State is still very much a moving target.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad that we haven't released much of anything because frankly, at different moments over the last 3-4 weeks, there have been some things that I thought were pretty stable that have evolved and changed. So we need to keep that flexibility. So I'm not answering you because we're trying to be secretive as much as. We're trying to make sure that we don't put any information out there that becomes false tomorrow and then back on the next day and because some things have been volleying back and forth. So to your point, look, like I think that we all know that Champions Classic is a priority.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully we'll be able to confirm some details on that soon in terms of location and date. But even that, we're trying to finalize that. Big Ten ACC Challenge, kind of the same thing. It's it's trending the right way, until we actually get to a point where we've got that, or even we know who we're playing, I think that it's probably premature to say that anything is for sure. Mm-hmm. I will say this, that because there were we actually did not finish our schedule this summer. Normally, what we would do in a summer is that we kind of keep about one game in our back pocket. For all sorts of reasons that may come up. There was one instance several years ago where that game in our back pocket became Michigan State Georgetown the day before the Super Bowl at Madison Square Garden in January. That game happened in like June or July, and that's what we used kind of the back pocket game for. So we like to have those just because you don't know what comes up. This year we actually had three games that we didn't end up filling. We were talking back in April, but as the summer progressed, and it became pretty clear that we didn't know what we didn't know, we just kind of held off. So we were not in a position where we were going to need to cancel a whole bunch of games, and we had a smaller sample with which to work from when the D1 Council voted to adjust the start date of the season. So I think that we've tried to keep in contact with people as best as we can for those games that maybe we were looking to for this year. We've talked to several about pushing it to a future year. Like we're trying to do right by people.
Right.
But even today I was talking to another school in a game that I thought was long dead, not involving Michigan State. Like they're like, oh yeah, that's back on. I'm like, 2 weeks ago, like you guys weren't even talking. Like that thing was gone and off the table and was being pushed back a year. And they're like, nope, we're back. We might have a date. And that's how fluid it is. I think that the other part of it too is that we need to get through this year a little bit.
Yeah.
We kind of take inventory of what happened and what didn't happen, and how do we reconcile some of the things that weren't able to happen along the way.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a game that we're planning to play and it doesn't get played because of COVID and then we can't reschedule it, like we would probably take the same mentality to try and do right by that game in a future year. So truthfully, I'm not sure what the non-conference schedule is going to look like. I think that there's still some work to be done there.
Yeah.
Kind of like the conference schedule. I don't think it's getting released tomorrow or the next day either.
So because this is a situation that so many programs are looking at. So for you guys, for kind of the layman out there listening, like when it comes to an event like Orlando, right, the MTE down there that you currently have, you know, your name in for, like what boxes do you kind of need to check for that to be something that you're like, all right, we're all in. This makes sense.
Yeah. So the thing in general about the MTEs, so I already gave you the stat regarding 16 out of the 24 MTEs were supposed to start before November 25th.
Right.
You didn't think you were going to get MTE stats all day.
We need some graphs.
That I wanted to be giving them either. But out of the 24 bracketed events, there's at least 21 of them that some portion of their field has changed since September 16th. Whether that's teams canceling out, whether that's teams getting added, whether it's the entire event being canceled. There's several of them that are actually outside the country that come into play. It gets moved. Like there's all sorts of things going on. But just think about that. Like nearly all of the preseason tournaments have had their fields affected in some shape or form.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been a big it's been a big moving target for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
For the schools, for the coaches, for the administrators, for the event promoters. I mean, there's a good number of people that put on some really, really good events over the course of the early part of college basketball. And they're in a tough spot too. And some of it's not by control of the schools. Some of it is. But that really illustrates kind of the challenges of where some of those MTEs are. So, so I don't know that there's a one size fits all answer, because each MTE is in a different, it's in a different position. What were you supposed to start before November 25th? Do you have schools that when they come down to wherever they're supposed to go, because most of these MTEs are in warm weather.
Yeah.
When they return home, do they have a 14-day quarantine?
Right.
Like that's a pretty big issue.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody's kind of got their own story. The stories don't align. And when you're trying to get four or eight teams to have all their stories align, like it just, the math and probability on that is really low. So, yeah. I don't know that there's a perfect answer to that beyond that individual schools, conferences, and event promoters are trying to work through it on a one-on-one basis.
Excellent. All right. Well, this was good. Highly educational, as always. And it's certainly helpful for, you know, someone who hypothetically might have only been paying attention to golf for the last few months and has no idea what the hell is going on other than floating reports of this and that on Twitter. So this was great, Gav.
No, it's good to be with you. Maybe we can do this again when everything in the scheduling world changes again. So that'll probably be tomorrow.
Next week? Yeah, perfect. Sounds good, man. Well, we do appreciate you coming on. How long have you been in Lansing?
So I came as a student in the fall of 2000.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And been a student manager for 4 years.
Yeah.
And then video coordinator, was at the Big Ten Conference for a year. So was back home in suburban Chicago for a year before coming back as director of ops, and then assistant AD, associate AD, whatever the heck it is that I do now. So So on and off, I've been here since fall of 2000 now. So I'm getting old.
So on this podcast, we are all about supporting our local restaurants and our local restaurant employees. Do you have any place that you would recommend your friends in East Lansing and Lansing are sure to get some takeout from and take care of their bartenders and servers?
Yeah, so I've tried to get over to Crunchy's in Lansing, and the Peanut Barrel. I'm a big burger guy. So nothing like a cheeseburger plain. And I'll let you in on something a little anecdotal. When I order my plain cheeseburgers, I order it to plain cheeseburger, just cheeseburger and bun. And I usually get this odd look, like you're asking for a bun, because twice in my life I've asked for a plain cheeseburger and had a burger and cheese with no bun come back on a plate. And me being the ridiculously OCD detailed person that I am, literally specify every detail of the damn burger before I order. So
the fact that you just get a cheeseburger with cheese, a burger, and a bun is couldn't be more befitting of I'd just say your general disposition, KP.
I try. This is usually the part where you tell people not to forget to tip their bartenders and servers.
You're
right?
Damn right, and you just delivered it better than I could. So we're gonna leave it on that. Listen to KP, and we appreciate you coming on, man. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Quinn. To the county, the place where I